Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC, New York Public Radio, this is Soundcheck On Demand. I'm John Schaefer. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by DataPipe Managed IT Services, delivering a comprehensive suite of managed services, including implementing, securing, and scaling applications designed for mid-market and Fortune 1000 enterprises. DataPipe.com.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. We begin with one of the few women in the history of music to have inspired so much controversy, Yoko Ono. Some say she broke up the Beatles. Others say she saved John Lennon. An alternate portrait of Ono as the strong, uncompromising survivor has emerged in more recent years. Her latest CD, which comes out this Friday, is a collection of remixes of her songs. It's called Yes, I'm a Witch. Joining us to help explain Yoko Ono is Larry Kane, the journalist who traveled with the Beatles on their first tour of the U.S. His latest book is Lennon Revealed, which comes out in paperback in March. Also with us on the phone is Alan Kosen, the New York Times classical music critic and Beatles authority. You're laughing, Alan, but welcome back to Soundcheck.
Good to be back.
Larry, let me begin with you. The title of Yoko Ono's new record, we were just hearing the title track, Yes, I'm a Witch. Do you read anything into that as a choice of title?
Very much so. I don't think that Yoko really cares very much about how she's perceived in the long run by Beatles fans. And I think the title is obviously an answer to the question, are you who you are? Are you a rough person? Are you a rugged individualist? And I do believe that she is privately sensitive, but not publicly sensitive. And I think it's her way of saying, yeah, I am what you think I am, but I've contributed a lot, and I want you to hear what I have to say.
Well,
but
the song says, I don't fit in your ways. I'm not going to die for you. You might as well face the truth. I'm going to stick around for quite a while.
And let's face it, there's a lot of things she could have done over the years, over the last 25, 30 years, to change her imagery, and she has not. She's been consistent in her beliefs. She had more impact on John Lennon than he really had three or four major women in his life. And she, along with the young lady he had a relationship with in the mid-70s, was very instrumental, but mostly Yoko, because she impacted the final years of his life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, when people blame her for breaking up the Beatles, although I'm going to get in a lot of trouble for this because Beatle fans are so polarized about this, they don't realize that it's the Beatles who broke up the Beatles. At that time, in 1969 and 1970, it's hard for us to go back to that time. Most of them felt, as they used to say, the bubble has burst.
Right.
And it's time for us to move on. And they thought that individually they could do as well as they did together because they didn't know. And I want you to get this right when I say this. They didn't know that the Beatles were the Beatles in 1969 or 70. They didn't know that they would become the iconic legendary figures of the 20th and so far the 21st century.
Even though they were bigger than God, as Lennon said famously?
That's what he said, but you know, that was also taken out of context. But here's the fact of life. If you take the years 1969 and 1970 and you put yourself back in that time, the Beatles were huge. They were gigantic. They were superstars. But they were not what they are today in terms of the impact on our social conscience and on our history and our cultural history and our perspective.
Right. Alan Kosen, Yoko Ono is frequently lampooned not just for whatever role she may or may not have had in the breakup of the Beatles, but also her own music is, you know, it's difficult listening for some people. Now we have this new album that features Cat Power and the Flaming Lips and Polyphonic Spree and all these people doing versions of her songs. She's even playing at this year's prestigious South by Southwest Festival. Are we seeing a long delayed reconsideration of Yoko Ono as an artist?
Well, I think there's been a long-delayed reconsideration of Yoko Ono as an artist going on for about 20 or 30 years at this point. In the 1980s, you saw things like the B-52s and Lenny Lovitch and other people sort of picking up on what she was doing. And I don't know if Lenny Lovitch ever talked about it, but the B-52s certainly admitted that she was a big influence on them. And in fact, a few years ago, when Yoko put out a boxed set of her selected tracks, she released a promo video in which she was interviewed by Kate Pearson of the B-52s. Mm-hmm. And on the classical side of things, I mean, I see an influence in the work of Meredith Monk and Diamanda Galish and other people as well. And I have even actually been at concerts by, I think, the Downtown Ensemble and other groups where they've actually resurrected some of her mid-1960s performance pieces.
Because she was on the scene. I mean, she was part of the downtown New York scene with people like John Cage and the founding minimalist composer Lamont Young and folks like that.
Definitely. I think she was a little more on the art side of things, but she had a music side as well. And, I mean, I've dug up some reviews from the Times back in those days. And they almost all use the word, you know, mystifying.
But as mystifying as the music and the singing may be to some, clearly there are others for whom it is. You mentioned Alan the B-52s and Lena Lovitch. This album full of people like La Tigre and DJ Spooky, The Apples in Stereo. Here's Anthony from Anthony and the Johnsons doing his remix of the Yoko Ono song Toy Boat.
Help me out of here. Waiting for a boat to help me out. The boat that reached my shore was a toy boat. Waiting for a boat to help me out. I'm dreaming of a lake I've never seen before. Dreaming of a lake I've never seen. The lake I've seen last was a picture lake. Dreaming of a lake I've never seen.
A little bit of the gender-bending voice of Anthony from Anthony and the Johnsons and his reworking of Yoko Ono's Toy Boat from the new Yoko Ono collaborative CD called Yes, I'm a Witch. We are discussing the legacy of Yoko Ono with our guests, Larry Kane, the journalist and author of the book Lenin Revealed, which is out in paperback next month in March, and Alan Kozin of the New York Times, classical music critic. And Alan, Larry was saying, you know, talking before about Yoko's purported role in the breakup of the Beatles. What's your opinion about that?
I think the one thing that I disagree with that Larry said was that Beatles fans still think of her as having broken up the Beatles. I think that most Beatles fans who have devoted any thought to it at all kind of know that that's not the case. I mean, it's been explained by Lennon, by the other Beatles, so many times. And I think that even casual, you know, a lot of people sort of just hear about Yoko Ono, and the first thing they hear is that she broke up the Beatles, because that myth does keep on living. But even if you just casually look at something like the anthology, it's really clear there were business problems, there were problems of ennui, there were, you know, just the tensions of four people stuck in a room together for all the time they were, and growing apart and growing creatively in different ways. And wanting their own share of the spotlight.
Let me ask Larry to respond. Larry, I mean,
well, I didn't say that she did break up the Beatles. I said that a lot of Beatles fans, and if you go to some of these Beatles get-togethers, like the Beatlefest, the Fest for Beatle fans, there is no question that the you know, you talk about various political candidates in 08, how divisive they might be, and the polarizing factor in some of their candidacies. When you mention Yoko Ono's name, you originate and motivate comments that would astound you. I was in a Powell's bookstore, one of the great bookstores in Portland, Oregon, and I thought somebody actually grabbed my lapels of my sport jacket and said, "You've written a book that says she's a good person. How can you do that?" And I thought they were going to attack me. Alan, I believe it's very polarized out there, but it's more than the Beatles splitting up. I think it's the kind of personality she has. First of all, she's a woman, and we still live in a sexist society where people do not really appreciate some of the roles of women. Unfortunately, that's the fact of life. Secondly, she was not only a woman in her way ahead of her time in terms of being forceful, but she was the first woman who encouraged a stay-at-home dad in America. And if you remember that John Lennon in his time, staying at home with a child, was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that in many ways she's very independent, as I said, a rugged individualist, but in person and personally, much more delightful and much softer and much more human than people would give her credit for. I think she's a delightful person, wonderful to be with. But I also believe that most Beatles fans, especially the young teenagers today who are coming up and just loving them, have this impression of she broke them up and that's it.
Well,
it's one of those great stereotypes of the world.
Yeah, and we've actually, Yoko Ono was on Soundcheck a couple of years ago, still incredibly loyal to the work, to the memory of John Lennon. Then there is the question, Alan Kosen, of her own work. It's been dismissed by many Beatles fans, probably for the reasons that Larry has just enumerated, as being the work of a charlatan. But the fact is that she did work, on a kind of conceptual plane in her visual art, in her music. Has that made it difficult for people to kind of accept the either end of her art?
Well, it probably has. I mean, if we're talking about people who are only listening to the Beatles and pop, Yoko's stuff would always have sounded a little bit off to them. I think musically there are like three or four Yoko Onos. There are the early conceptual pieces that are often just instructions on cards saying, think of a cloud.
Right.
And then
that was part of that whole Fluxus movement, right, here in New York in the early 60s.
Right. And then when she first got together with John Lennon, what they were doing musically were just sort of these big freak-out jam kind of things where she would be, shrieking and screaming and making all kinds of vocal noises. And this would sort of push him to do, sort of feedback guitar solos.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, if you listen to the first album where they had those twin albums, Plastic Ono Band, it was John,
right,
Lennon, Plastic Ono Band, Yoko Ono, Plastic Ono Band. I mean, hers is, she really has the band cooking there. And she just sort of is an instrument in the band. It's as if she's a saxophone or a lead guitar or something. And then after that, she sort of stepped back and tried to do conventional pop songs. And in a way, I think the conventional pop songs were the least successful of the things that she did in the way that she did them. Because, she's not Ella Fitzgerald, and I don't think she even thinks that she's Ella Fitzgerald. She sings the way she sings, and it's good for her stuff, but it turns out that when other people do her stuff, it's often better.
Hence this new record.
Well, not just this new record. There was one called Every Man Has a Woman,
mm-hmm,
where, Elvis Costello did Walking on Thin Ice. Despite what I just said, I actually like her version better than Elvis Costello. But a lot of those songs that had never struck me as, such amazing songs on the original records actually sounded a lot better with other people doing other treatments of them. And then I went back to hers and sort of appreciated her versions a bit more than I had. But I kind of like the avant-garde stuff a bit more, really. I mean, I thought that was really doing something that nobody else was doing and that other people ended up picking up.
Right. Well, I mean, the pop songs in these newly recast versions on the album, Yes, I'm a Witch, some of them work pretty well. Like, here's the Sleepy Jackson doing a version of Yoko Ono's I'm Movin' On.
I'm moving on, moving on, it's all
Well, there's Yoko Ono, and it's still her voice, and it's still her song, I'm Moving On, but the performance, the remix by the band The Sleepy Jackson from Yoko Ono's collaborative record, Yes, I'm a Witch, and we are looking behind the myth at the music and the art of Yoko Ono, and we've been speaking with Alan Kozin of the New York Times, and Larry Kane, whose latest book is called Lennon Revealed, and obviously any book about John Lennon is going to have a fair amount about Yoko Ono in it. And so, Larry, you interviewed Yoko about the initial meetings between John Lennon and Yoko. What was the initial attraction?
Well, the initial attraction was difference. They both, you know, from the time he bit into her apple, which was part of
you have to explain that.
Part of her artwork was a ladder and an apple. And he bit into her apple, and she said, you know, you bit into my artwork. And he said, so be it. And they began this clandestine relationship, and they really were together for almost 13 years before he died, 11 years as husband and wife, and a few years before that. I think that she had a tremendous impact on him. The relationship was much deeper than most people think. Beyond the sexual and passion of an early relationship, this was a man who, because of his absolutely disgusting childhood, was a domestic abuser, a woman who used women, a man who used women, a person who did not have respect for women as an equal to him. And somehow or other, over a period of years, through this intimate discussions they had for books that she demanded he read, he became, in his final years in life, an ardent feminist, a person who had was a bad father the first time around, became a pretty darn good father the second time around. His songs explain that. The song Woman was a direct result of that in Double Fantasy. She had a tremendous impact on his life, and in more ways than just being Yoko. I mean, Yoko is one of the most famous people in the world, and people deride her or praise her or respect her, but she's consistent to his beliefs. Every couple of years, as Alan knows, or every certain amount of time, she will take out an ad in the Times and other papers for peace. When I interviewed her, it was first time during the Republican National Convention in New York, and I walked into the room, and I was wearing I'm a former television anchor, and I always wear a dark suit and red tie, and she said, you must be a Republican. And I said, now, why would you say that? She said, because you're dressed in red, white, and blue. I said, you know, how do you know who I am? I said, don't brand me. I won't stereotype you. She was very, very lovely. I will tell you this. The transformation from John Lennon, who had tremendous drug and substance abuse problems, into a person who started to think beyond himself, beyond his own indulgent behaviors, was dramatic in the late 1970s. And I think she and May Pang had a lot to do with it. And the music, Double Fantasy, tremendously inspired. Just as number 9, Dream, which is one of the most haunting songs around, was inspired by his lover at the time, May Pang, Yoko Ono definitely had the most impact on his life in the late 70s. Interesting story about number 9, Dream.
Well, we'll come back, and we're going to come back to that in a couple of minutes, Larry. But I wanted to get to the song Imagine before we take a break, because, I mean, while this is, you know, a famous song, it's perhaps not as well known that the lyrics were inspired by a passage in Yoko Ono's book called Grapefruit. Although the publisher apparently rejected having it listed as a Lennon-Ono song, so we know it as John Lennon's Imagine. Here's a little bit, and we'll take a quick break, and when we continue, we'll open the phones. You can give us a call at 212-264-7483, or you can email us, soundcheck@wnyc.org, 212-264-7483. What do you think of the legacy of Yoko Ono? Is she worth our attention as an artist in her own right? Was the affair, John and Yoko, a great love affair through music history? And how do you think history will judge Yoko Ono as an artist? 212-264-7483. We're back with Alan Kozin and with author Larry Kane in just a moment. yet another remix of Yoko Ono's Yes, I'm a Witch. This is Witch Shocktronica from Hank Shockley. You're listening to Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. We're talking about perhaps the most controversial rock wife and avant-garde history in all of music, avant-garde artist in music history, I should say. And that is, of course, Yoko Ono. We've been speaking with Larry Kane, the author of Lennon Revealed, among other books, and with Alan Kozin of The New York Times. And we also want to hear from you at 212-264-7483 or via email, soundcheck@wnyc.org. Larry, there is the image of Yoko Ono as, you know, the cold-hearted manipulator who broke up the Beatles, or, as you told us before the break, the kind of proto-feminist who not only kept John Lennon in line, but really kind of helped transform him during the 1970s. Those seem like two very, those seem like images, stereotypes, not a real person. Is the real Yoko Ono somewhere in the middle?
I think the real Yoko Ono is the activist. I think the real Yoko Ono has an awful lot of passion about causes. She's one of the first people, by the way, who, and this is going to surprise a lot of people in New York City, who encouraged John to be a major contributor to bulletproof vests for police and firefighters during a very turbulent time. I think that way before, and this is a very significant event, way before all the Hollywood icons became involved in other parts of the world and problems, social problems, Yoko Ono was right at the forefront along with John. And I think that, let me put it this way. There's no question that she might be acerbic and she might be hostile, but in the overall picture, what she's done with the latter part of her life is pretty extraordinary, making people think. And I think in that regard, she's done a very good job. Although try to tell that to a group of Beatles fans and you'll be smothered.
Alan Kozin, when John Lennon was murdered, one would have expected a dramatic shift in public opinion about Yoko Ono for, out of sympathy, if nothing else. And now we have this sordid affair with the chauffeur, you know, accusing her, trying to shake her down for $2 million, accusing her of being abusive and sexually harassing him and stuff. What does it take for Yoko Ono to catch a break from the media and from the fans?
Well, I don't know that this is the fault of the media. you know, her driver trying to shake her down certainly has nothing to do with the people who have reported it. And equally, she previously had an employee who stole a bunch of John Lennon's diaries and effects. And, you know, periodically, I mean, she has an employee who she runs into problems with, and I can't really comment on whose fault any of these things are, but they look pretty straight on the surface.
But I can also say though that
you know, I mean, I've been there to interview her a lot of times over the years, and the rest of her staff is actually pretty steady. You know, there are people who've worked for her for years and years and years.
It seems to me that, you know, she should be getting a little bit of sympathy from people for some of
what she's been through. I mean, I thought that after Lennon was killed, she got an awful lot of sympathy, and I think that generally things have changed a bit more than, you know, maybe I'm the one out of step here. I think things have changed a bit more than either you or Larry think. But Larry may spend more time, you know, talking at Beatle conventions and running into people who really dislike her than I do.
Let's open up the phones and see what some of our Soundcheck
sure.
listeners think. And we're actually going to begin in Mexico City. Edward Gomez wrote the catalog for the Yes, Yoko Ono exhibition. Edward, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hello, John. Can you hear me? I'm in Mexico.
I can hear you just fine.
Thanks for letting me speak to you. I'm delighted. I'll enjoy your show. I want to say that, yes, I contributed to the exhibition catalog called Yes, Yoko Ono. The exhibition opened in late 2000 in New York and traveled to four countries. It's the definitive, we think, publication, we meaning the contributors, on her career, and I wrote the section on her music. I speak Japanese. My background is in Japanese modernism. All of us who put the show together, the exhibition, were coming from two points of view. One, as Westerners, we certainly knew our modernist art history, our rock and roll history, but we were also coming to it knowing Japanese modernism. Very important point that's forgotten in the discussion of Yoko's musical works. She was coming from composition. She was coming specifically from poetics. When I sat down to interview her the first time over a period of many, many months, the first question I asked her in Japanese was about Enka. You're smart enough to know what Enka is, the Japanese popular song. And she was sharp as a tack and went right to a discussion of it. It was fascinating. We also looked at Japanese musical notation, which, of course, is completely different from Western musical notation.
Right.
And all of these ideas have been stirring around in her brain for a long time.
So you're saying there's a cultural context to even some of her pop songs, which might...
Indeed. Yeah,
okay.
Indeed. May I share a quick anecdote with you, which I find fascinating?
If it's quick, Edward.
Okay. I encourage your listeners to get their hands on the first album, Yoko Ono Plastic Ono Band, from 1970, released simultaneously with Lennon's solo album. The sound collages in a pre-digital age, she told me that John and she were in the studio late at night with meters and meters long tape, mm-hmm. tape lengths, literally collaging them together.
Well, and Alan Kozin was telling us the same thing, that that the early Plastic Ono Band recording, the band is cooking, I believe, Alan, is how you put it. There's a sympathetic voice. Let's see if we have a different view. And it's been a while since we heard from my brother, Jerry from Queens, but he has called in as well. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, John, how you doing?
All right.
Good. You know, I wanted to weigh in on the Yoko Ono thing as well because, you know, I remember when her and John Lennon hooked up in the 1968, I believe it was, and I remember the effect she had on Lennon and the effect that it had on the Beatles, and ultimately I think her love for John Lennon's love for Yoko Ono was way more than his love for the Beatles, ultimately causing their split. And last night I watched a show called the Rolling Stone Circus.
The Rock and Roll Circus, yeah.
And on the show, they actually had Yoko Ono singing with John Lennon. It had Keith Richards on guitar. It had Eric Clapton on guitar. And she utterly ruined the song. So I really am not a fan of Yoko Ono's whatsoever. And I just thought she was horrible.
All right. Well, you know, Jerry, along with everything else that he is, including being my brother, is Alan, I think, a good example of what Larry Kane was talking about before, the Beatles fan who, you know, believes to this day that Yoko Ono is in large measure responsible for breaking up the band.
Okay, but his explanation was a little more nuanced than that. You know, I mean, when he says that John loved her more than the Beatles, you know, yeah, that's right. So mm-hmm. does that mean that she broke up the Beatles? It just, I don't know. It depends how you look at it.
Yeah. All right, let's see what some other listeners make of this whole thing. Mike joins us from New Jersey. Mike, Yoko Ono, fan or foe?
Hi, John. Thanks for having me on. I think in any partnership that's wildly successful, you often have people secretly harboring these feelings that, you know, I and not the other guy, and really the reason for the success of this partnership. And I think that Yoko's introduction into John's life really fueled that feeling that both John and Paul had, but she fueled the feeling that John had and definitely did contribute to John's feeling that he could do better on his own.
So and when you say the partnership, you're talking about John and Paul with the Beatles,
Paul,
not Yoko and John.
No, I'm talking about the John and
All
Paul
right.
partnership. And she fueled the feeling that John may have been harboring, as any partner, whether it's Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis or whoever the heck it is, I'm really the guy here, and this other guy, I don't know what he's doing, but I'm really the guy. And I think that if you listen to the first albums that when they made together, the Plastic Ono Band and John's first solo album, you can see the deterioration of the music. Really pretty horrible stuff. The only reason it was purchased was because of John's success as a Beatle.
Sure, name recognition,
The only reason that her success followed that was her hookup with John. I'm not talking about her as an activist or her as a painter or a sculptor. Those things speak for themselves. I'm just talking about her musically. I think that people allowed their minds to be bent around to think that this is really good stuff, when really it wasn't.
Okay, Mike, thanks very much. Let me come back to Larry Kane, author of the book Lennon Revealed. One of the things that, you know, you make a fair amount of in the book was that in the 1970s, you know, it wasn't all, you know, honeymoon for John and Yoko. There was a very rocky patch where they actually split. And at Yoko's suggestion, he took up with, you mentioned her before, May Pang.
Well, I think suggestion's a good word, but might be sort of encouragement. She felt that he needed a relationship outside the house. She was pretty fed up because of sort of a exhibitionist moment that he had with another woman not far from her in a party on the election night, 1972. And May Pang was a lovely, and is a lovely person, now mother to teenage children, who was a secretary to them, and she trusted her, and he trusted her, and she encouraged this relationship along. And you have to be careful what you wish for.
Mm-hmm.
Before you know it, John fell in love with her, and she fell in love with him, and they stayed together for a year and a half or so, and he eventually went back to her, but the contact
back
remained.
Back to Yoko, you mean?
Back to Yoko. So the contact remained, and May Pang had an influence on him with Number 9 Dream and some of the other albums. And I would say to you that they had an unconventional breakup in modern contemporary
yeah,
society.
I would say so.
Very unconventional, but May Pang played a role too.
Well, Number 9 Dream actually features the voice of May Pang. She is the one whispering the name John in this track. Number 9 Dream from John Lennon, the voice of May Pang, not Yoko Ono as many just assumed back in the 70s when this album came out. And we are examining the legacy of Yoko Ono with Alan Kozin of the New York Times, with author and broadcaster Larry Kane, and with some of our Soundcheck listeners. Let's take a final call. Jane here in Manhattan. What do you think about Yoko Ono?
Well, thank you for hearing me. A good program. When you're talking about why she was so disliked, your commentators fail to mention, I think, another element in that she was Asian.
Hmm.
And especially those back in those days, there was more prejudice against Asians than currently. And I think that a lot of people had the attitude, not rightly so, but, you know, here's this Asian woman taking over our totally British John Lennon. And I do think that that contributes and still does to some extent to the animosity against her.
Interesting. So you think it's still a factor today?
Yeah, unconsciously.
Yeah.
Sometimes these things aren't really, you know, totally conscious.
Right. Well, and certainly there's, that's certainly appropriate for someone whose career began in the conceptual art field where, you know, the conscious will and the conscious intention seem to always be getting in the way. I think that was Alan Kozin, if I can sort of, with one fell swoop, paint a broad swath across an entire movement in the early 60s. It seems like they were actually going for something that was subconscious, unconscious in the weird pieces that just consisted of, for example, notes on a postcard. What about Yoko Ono today? I mean, has she gone back? Has she ever really left that kind of way of working, even in the field of the pop songs?
You asking me?
Yeah.
Well, she still seems to be doing more or less conventional pop songs, but I think that she, on her recent albums, has kind of come to terms with the idea that she doesn't have to try and do the, the really four-minute song, you know, and the last few albums have I think she's really stretched out a lot.
Right.
They've never really gotten totally back to the conceptual things, but she still does conceptual projects now and then. I mean, a few years ago, I think in 2004, 2005, she did a thing with a flashlight where she would stand in front of an audience and flash the light once and then twice and then three times, and the once was supposed to be I, the twice was supposed to be love, and the third one was supposed to be you. And she just had the audiences who were all given flashlights flashing each other.
Sounds fairly conceptual to me.
Yeah. Also, when we did a Times talk a few years ago at the New School. And at the end of the thing, she handed out all of these blue puzzle pieces. and told the audience that they were pieces of the sky and that in 10 years we would all get back together and reassemble them. So I guess that's a conceptual thing as well.
Yeah, well, it's kind of nice, too, to have that kind of almost Zen quality introduced into Western art. Yoko Ono's latest is a collaborative disc called Yes, I'm a Witch, remixes and reproductions of various Yoko Ono songs. In the background, of course, the Beatles' Ballad of John and Yoko. We've been talking with Alan Kozin of the New York Times and Larry Kane, author of Lennon Revealed, about the legacy of Yoko Ono. Thanks to everyone who called in. Larry, Alan, thank you both for being with us this afternoon.
Pleasure. Pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Soundcheck from WNYC, New York Public Radio. Each day we dig into what's happening in music, and you can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. All of this is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. Thanks.